miles of black ribbon on the lone highway. Men turn into boys on the lone highway. Rest up creeps by on the lone highway. Pretty girls beware out on the lone highway. On the lone highway. Revolution Radio, it's Saturday, and it's time for the Scorpio Conspiracy Show with your host, Scorpio. Drop a little honey on the lone highway.
Let me pour another. Hello, and welcome to the Scorpio Conspiracy Show. Today's date is Saturday, July 4th, 2020. And I hope everyone is having a great 4th of July celebration, maybe having an illegal backyard barbecue, or just enjoying yourself away from the spiritual, mental, and physical restrictions that our government wishes to inflict upon the American people. But of course, it's all for your own good, don't you know? Government compliance saves lives, and to think otherwise is selfish and dangerous to the safety of others. Making decisions collectively, not as individuals, is the only way forward, the only way to save the very existence of our society, or so they want you to think. Trust the experts is the new mantra. Yes, scientists, epidemiologists, intelligence services, and technocrats know better than you. So stop talking and start listening and comply without hesitation. And it's kind of funny, you know, an epidemiologist isn't even a doctor. You know, it's really just a fancy term for a statistician, someone who makes, computer models based on speculation, possibilities, and half-baked theories. But, never mind that. Epidemiologist is a big, fancy word that sounds important. So just accept that any person with such a title knows more than yourself. And despite the fact that the experts told us that the coronavirus, or any virus for that matter, cannot survive in hot weather and in strong sunshine, despite that previous bit of information, we are seeing a huge spike in corona positive cases. And notice they just say corona positive. They never say if people are actually sick. They just tested positive. And recently they said that 50,000 positive cases in one day were recorded. 50,000. And, you know, okay. They admitted later on this segment on the news that the positive rates have been high as 25%. So if you do the math on this, it means that they had to perform more than 200,000 tests in a single day. Okay, guys? 200,000 tests collected, processed, and, you know, the results retrieved all in a single day. Well, sorry, I'm just not buying that. I don't see how it is logistically possible to do that many tests in one day. And, you know, if you kind of break it down, that comes down to 25,000 tests per hour based on an 8-hour workday. 25,000 tests per hour. And that's 416 tests per minute. So, again, I just don't see how this is logistically possible. You know, they must have an army of coronavirus testers out there, you know, and miles of cars lined up across the country to get tested all during, you know, one of the hottest months of the year. And, you know, for example, it's over 110 degrees right now in Arizona. But no matter, there's a huge outbreak in Phoenix, apparently, one of the hottest cities in the country. Yeah, one of the hottest cities in the country, no question. And one very important thing that I've learned from my research on this coronavirus pandemic is that it seems that cities controlled by left-wing Democrat Marxists seem to be the hardest hit by this new wave or this new spike of coronavirus for some odd reason. It's going to take a lot more research to determine why that is. As of now, it remains a mystery. And to heighten the mystery, the outbreak seems even more severe in cities controlled by lesbian Democrat Marxist mayors, Houston being the case in point. Over 100 degrees in Houston, but it's supposedly the hardest city hit by this new corona spike. And the mayor of Houston recently appeared on the PBS NewsHour yesterday. And she said that the beds are completely full of COVID patients right now in all of the hospitals in Houston. And she went even on to say that there may not even be a bed for you to die on if this continues. So there might not even be a bed for you to die on. I mean, you got to love this hyperbole and the imagery it must paint in people's minds and the fear this must create for people who actually believe what this woman is saying. And, you know, I've actually become a fan of the PBS NewsHour in a strange kind of way because, you know, it's the propaganda news hour for the more intelligent idiot, the more intellectual idiot. And they pretty much just lay out the whole agenda without any compunction on the PBS NewsHour. And it's interesting to note that, you know, just about every Jewish foundation imaginable is a major donor on the PBS NewsHour, along with a handful of pharmaceutical giants and financial services. That's who's paying for the show. But there's no agenda there, so no cause for alarm. Nothing to see here, folks. Just keep it moving. Please return to your homes and close all doors and windows. And for maximum safety, please hide under your bed in a fetal position wearing a gray jumpsuit and have a bottle of hand sanitizer by your side. Yeah, that's what we got to do to stay safe. Well, that said, I want to bring on Giuseppe and Mr. Mike Gatti onto the show, both of whom are beginning their own shows next week here on Revolution Radio. Giuseppe's show starts Friday, July 10th, 6 p.m. on Studio A. And Mike's show begins Sunday, July 12th, 6 p.m. Studio A as well. So, guys, how y'all doing?
Oh, happy
doing
fourth.
Great. Thank you.
Happy 4th of July. Scorpio, your sound is distorting a little bit. You might want to turn down your feed just a little bit.
Okay, thank you. Gee whiz, thank you.
Here's a little Jimi Hendrix to celebrate the day. What a different world it was back then, that's for sure. Okay, that's enough of that. Did you guys hear that?
Yeah, that was coming in loud and clear.
Oh, okay, great.
I hope my audio is better now.
It is. It's perfect now.
Okay, great. Mike, how are you doing?
Doing great. Sorry I stepped on you there, Giuseppe.
Oh, no, Mike. It's an honor to be on a show with you. I'm a huge fan of your website, The Rebel Madman, and the more madmen I can call friends, the better, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate the compliment.
Oh, yeah, you know, talking with Mike is like reading a really interesting part of the encyclopedia. I really do believe that. Mike, tell us when your show is Sunday, 6 p.m., Studio A, right? And could you give us some kind of overview of what you might be doing on your show?
Well, the thing that I would like to do more than anything else, Dave, is to attack revisionist history. The people in this country have been taught a pack of lies for 100 years, and now those lies are regurgitated on in every college and university that's out there, even the ones that are quote-unquote conservative. The lies are still regurgitated We have the same thing, especially in any government-mandated schooling, that all you're going to get is socialist indoctrination. And then it has filtered down, of course, to all modes of social media, because people quote lies for truth. And then if you challenge them to back up what they've been taught, they don't have a clue. So they resort to name calling and other wonderful intellectual exercises.
Yes, that's very true. And what name have you decided for your show?
Oh, wow. I've thought about it. I'm really looking at, basically is something along the lines of embracing our own destruction, because that's what we've done with embracing this false history. We have held these things that we have been taught for truth, and by holding them as gospel, so to speak, we are destroying ourselves, but we can't turn loose of it because we're addicted to it. So we're addicted to our own destruction.
Oh, that's very good, very good. Giuseppe, tell us a little about your show, and what's your working title right now on the show?
Well, the title is going to be called The Perfect Triangle. If you can envision an isosceles triangle, three equal sides joined by three equal angles, a beauty of perfect symmetry. And it's called that because in an angry, polarized, bilateral world with very, you know, weak minds, everybody is so angry, and they're right, and the other side's wrong. And I'm hoping that with using a third side to the dialectic and the debate, like body, mind, spirit, truth, conspiracy, perception, big pharma, natural healing, informed choice, real history, like Mike said, which is so true. I champion the fighting against this revisionist history, and there's revisionism going on in everything. So hopefully take a third side to things will cause listeners and people to step back and especially embrace a third position, because especially in politics right now, there are very few good ideas, but I don't care if it comes from a Democrat or Republican, as long as it's good for the people of this nation, this sovereign nation, let's just go with it. And so that's why it's called The Perfect Triangle.
Okay, great. That sounds interesting. Well, guys, what do you think about this correlation that I'm uncovering between far left Marxist Democrat mayors and outbreak of coronavirus? It's a bit of a mystery to me, and maybe we can sort of unravel what this correlation is. What do you guys think?
Go ahead, Giuseppe.
Well, I think that it seems Mike is an expert at revisionist history. Mike, to me, it seems like all they did was go back and look at the notes on the Bolshevik Revolution, which is funded by incredibly wealthy tribe members. For example, the original Bolshevik Revolution of 1917 was funded by the two Warburg brothers, Paul, who was heading the newly created Federal Reserve of the United States, and Max, who was controlling the Deutsche Bank. They literally sent train cars full of gold and cash to Lev Bronstein, better known as Leon Trotsky and Lenin and the other 17 instigators of the Bolshevik Revolution. And now what do you have? You have a subhuman piece of garbage, George Soros, funding Black Lives Matter, funding Antifa, funding all these other organizations. And then the central bankers are now voting through these major corporations to support Black Lives Matter and to support the rioters and things. So it seems to me as though this is just, we're reliving history. What do you think, Mike?
That's very well stated, Giuseppe. And Dave, your question, I don't really see a super question there, because the people best equipped to promote a Marxist agenda are Marxists themselves. So when you start talking about these left-wing zealots, they're all Marxists. And so naturally, you want to use them, those who truly have have drunk the Kool-Aid and who are really into this, of course you want them to be out in the forefront pushing all this stuff. And then all you do after that is the program is set up. So anyone who disagrees with these Marxists is automatically either a racist or a homophobe. So you've set up almost the perfect storm with those people. So if anyone who uses the phrase conservative, and I, you know, in all my years, I still haven't figured out what a conservative is. But if you have someone with conservative credentials step forward and say, hey, what you're doing here is absolutely asinine, well, automatically you must be a racist because you disagree with a Marxist. And throughout history, and very well stated, Giuseppe, on the Bolshevik Revolution, but, you know, we have examples in almost every Marxist revolution in history. You can find the seeds of what's happening in America right now in every one of those.
Yes, yes. And, of course, the question was with tongue firmly in cheek, obviously, these people see this as a grand opportunity for themselves. I'll occasionally monitor Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! Broadcast, and she's literally salivating at this. They really see this as their big moment to overthrow all the morals and the system in general and replace it with something very different.
You know, fellas, it's interesting to me that Amy Goodman and the Noam Chomsky types, which are, you know, limited hangout people who act as though they're classical liberals, but they're dual citizen traitors, and others, Tom Hartman, who's not a dual citizen, but still they're all salivating. What I don't understand is they want everything torn down. They want to destroy the majority of society in America, which is stable people working their jobs, just hoping for a little peace, a little quality time with their family, maybe a vacation, some security in their job. Why do they want to tear that down? And what do they want to replace it with? What do you guys think?
Well, I'll tell you, Jimmy Jean had an interesting observation about that. And he talked about the Democrats sort of unveiling gray jumpsuits. Everyone's going to wear a gray jumpsuit and get a $3,000 a month UBI check in the beginning. So I don't know. Mike, what are you thinking on that? Because I know when we were talking earlier, you had mentioned that our society is in its death throes right now. So what do you think is being birthed in all this?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt we're going to have the complete Marxist heaven. And, you know, when it comes to Amy Goodman, I've sent her several emails several years back telling her when on her show that the democracy, was she aware that Marx said democracy was the first step to communism? And of course, I got no answer. But that just being a sideline.
That's surprising.
What we're seeing right now is the fact that we are, it's a disintegration of the society that Marxists hate. And it has to be the disintegration of the middle class. The middle class has to be destroyed because the middle class actually is the balance that keeps this society together. So that middle class has to be completely destroyed and eliminated. And second of all, Dave, and you and I have spoken about this before, what we're ending up here, and is if you are a student of history, you know that all of these Marxist-led uprisings or revolutions or whatever you want to call them, all of them, every one of them, with no exception, ends in some form of mass genocide. And so that is on the horizon, and I know no one wants to talk about that, but it's there. And it will come. And I have felt for a long time that this mass vaccination is the linchpin that keeps it all together.
Yes, I have to agree with you, Mike. The vaccination, you know, I think, too, there's going to be a sort of a slow kill element in the vaccine, because that way they can have, you know, plausible deniability and say, oh, well, you died 10 years later. It's not our fault, of course. And I think there's going to be a behavioral component to it where they're going to be able to alter people's behavior. And then I think there'll be a sterilization component to it as well. And once they're able to do just one mandatory vaccine, just one time, I believe that they're going to do it in perpetuity and it'll be a permanent thing every year.
That's exactly right. And they are literally going rabid with salivating with the thought that they're close to achieving that. And it's funny. And their first step is this obedience, like training a puppy with a muzzle, this slave training of wearing these masks. And I'd like to share a few quotes from respected sources. The New England Journal of Medicine, the quote reads, "We know that wearing a mask outside healthcare facilities offers little, if any, protection from infection." The Annals of Internal Medicine, "Both surgical and cotton masks seems to be ineffective in preventing the dissemination of SARS-CoV-2 from the coughs of patients with COVID-19 to the environment and external mask surface." And the Journal of Life and Environmental Sciences, "This study showed that the filtering efficiency of cloth face masks were relatively lower, and washing and drying practices deteriorated the efficiency." The Journal of Influenza and Other Respiratory Viruses, "None of the studies established a conclusive relationship between mask respirator use and protection against influenza infection." The Journal of Epidemiology, your favorite, Scorpio, "and infection, there is little evidence to support the effectiveness of face masks to reduce the risk of infection." The British Medical Journal, last one I'll read, "Laboratory confirmed virus were significantly higher in the cloth mask groups. Penetration of cloth masks by particles was almost 97%. The study is the first RCT of cloth mask, and the results caution against the use of cloth masks. Moisture retention, reuse of cloth mask, and poor filtration may result in increased risk of infection." So essentially, they understand that they're telling the sheep, the normies, wear those masks, it will make you sick. Let me say that again. They know wearing masks will make you sick.
Yes, and make you compliant as well. That's part of this training that you referenced earlier. Briefly, I just want to take a look at the chat room and see who's aboard. We have Lily V, The Jurist, Basement 5, Lady Horse, Mona Radler. Hello, Mona. The Mechanic, Captain Kirk, who is a great caller on Jim Fetcher's show. Maybe he'll call in later. Boy Solomon, Snippets, Dashy, Jerbear, Eagle Flower, Blasphemous Buddha, Comet, Maced 139, Wall E, and SJ. So I'll be keeping an eye on that to look for any insightful comments, which are actually quite common. We're coming near the close to the bottom of the hour. And I've really become a fan of the PBS NewsHour in a strange kind of way, because they really do just sort of lay out the agenda without any compunction or fear. And of course, we have all these big Jewish donors and pharmaceutical giants adding into the mix of this. And I was really shocked that the mayor of Houston said there won't be enough beds for you to die in if this continues. I mean, can you believe the hyperbole and fear they're trying to spread to the general population?
I can believe it, because they're doing it. I'd like to give a shout out to Eagle Flower. He accurately corrected me when I said isosceles triangle. That's only two sides equal. I meant equilateral triangle. Good thing I didn't record my promos yet.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. I must have missed Eagle Flower. I'm sorry, I didn't call him out. Oh, yeah. Good. Mike, what are you thinking about these full hospital beds in Houston? I'd like to see some footage or some kind of proof that this is actually happening.
Well, I think they learned from the very beginning, Dave. They learned, if you will remember, when this thing first started, end of February, 1st of March, through about mid-March, they were claiming all these hospitals were full. They were building temporary hospitals and everything else. and some good old common citizens went down and took their iPhones or what have you recording device, and they proved that no one was in these hospitals, that there weren't people there. I knew a lady personally who worked as a nurse in Fort Smith, and she said they had nothing to do during this element. So I believe that being a good PSYOP, as you look at the results of your initial operation and you see where the faults are, then you move to make sure that those don't occur again. So I am sure that they will have something to help the poor lady.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, the music's kicking in. Everyone stand by. We'll be right back here on the Scorpio Conspiracy Show. I am with Giuseppe and Mr. Mike Gatti talking about the current state of affairs and the sea of lies in which we currently live. I'd just like to thank everyone listening for taking some time out of your day to listen to the show during 4th of July. And Mike and Giuseppe, I would like to share a couple of brief observations with you guys and then see what your thinking is on this. I am absolutely amazed by the global scale of what is happening. And for example, you know, they've gotten every country to go along with essentially the same agenda. I was watching a clip on the news, some story on Pakistan. It wasn't even about the COVID virus. But I noticed on the sidewalk in front of the some of the stores there, they had the same exact kind of social distancing markers that they're using all over the world. And I've noticed Mike brought up, you know, these tents that they've been putting up. They've done it all over the world with that as well. They've built these tents in South America, and they're completely empty in the city that I'm in. There's not a single person, not even a nurse. The tents are just there as sort of a movie prop. So my question is how did they coordinate this kind of an event worldwide? They've gotten people to do it in America and all over the world. By what method do you think that they've been able to do this? Is there already a secret world government in place? Or were there threats made, phone calls made? What do you guys think, and what's the method by which they're doing this?
Well, I guess I'll go first. I think it's a very simple method that there's already a global communication system used by transnational corporations, used by the UN, used by the World Health Organization. They have the infrastructure to disseminate anything they want. And then on top of that, you look at the infrastructure of like the six global pharmaceutical companies. They can easily do it, I think.
Well, Mike, why don't you weigh on this? Because you have more information about how this secret system actually operates.
You didn't need to tell everybody. sorry. Now, the one of the things I like bring up is this, and that is a quote by the CIA director William Casey in 1981. Now listen carefully to what Casey said, and I will quote verbatim, and it has been documented that he said this. It's been tried, they've tried to deny it on many, many platforms, but it is proven beyond a shadow of a doubt that he said this. And that is, and I quote, "We will know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false." Now, that was 1981. I remember a meeting that I was in with the oxymoronic folks called government intelligence in 1984, and I remember distinctly a very well-placed a man in the government intelligence operative field, he said, you know, he was laughing and chuckling about some things that had happened in 1984. And he said, you know what's really amazing? That we can tell these crazy citizens exactly, and they still don't believe it. So I look at this, and one of the things I want everyone to think of, why do you believe CIA has admitted, or the deep state has admitted, that they control the media? They did that before Congress. And there are so many statements that they've made that they completely control media. And so here is my question to listeners is, what proof do you have that anything you see on TV or anything you see in a newspaper or anything you see that is called news is accurate? How could you prove it or disprove any of it? And it is a large psyop. It is a psychological operation. But one of the things that I would like to tie in with that, and it was a very good answer, Giuseppe, and also the thing we forget is the fact, what countries do international bankers not control? And those the countries that the international bankers not control are frequently mentioned by U.S. presidents as an axis of evil. So what news can you actually get from these crazy enemies to America, North Korea, Iran, and Russia and China? How do we know what's going on there? Do we see a lot of stories coming out of those countries? Because those countries are the four that I'm aware of that the international bankers do not control everything within the realm of government. So how do we know anything's true?
That's a very good point, Mike, and you're kind of answering the question from the opposite direction. I totally agree. I've said on the show previously that I wouldn't believe that it was a sunny day outside with blue skies if I heard it on the TV, unless I looked out the window first. So I'm on the same page with you there. And I believe that the CIA admitted control of the media back during the Church Committee hearings back in the 1970s. Isn't that right?
Well, actually, they admitted some control earlier than that, but they admitted almost total control in the 70s. And one of the arrogant bastards in a congressional hearing, and I've got a tape of this, in a congressional hearing, and he was asked by a dumb member of Congress, as if there was another kind. He was asked, okay, well, are you here to tell us that you actually have the funds to control the media at every opportunity, at every locale, at every agenda? You have a means of controlling the media. And he said, oh, yes. He said, you know, why say this or that about this magazine or that magazine? Because we have people at the executive level of every major media operation in the country. And the congressman responded and he said, well, how do you do that? And in his arrogance, he said, you know what? We've actually paid more for good prostitutes.
I'd like to interject, Scorpio, to augment your answer to the question. Is if,
oh, yeah, go ahead.
In every good false flag, there's always a test run, right? Like a simulation. What happened before 9/11? What happened with Sandy Hook? And the simulation test run before this was the called Event 201, where I watched footage of it, where the World Health Organization and representatives from all countries were talking about this virus. It was actually a coronavirus that would spread like wildfire worldwide. And it was so offensive to listen to these lies, but I'm looking at the room and there's like 400, 500 people from important positions of every country. And so that's another way they implemented this so quickly.
Great point, Giuseppe. Great point. That had slipped my mind, but I had studied that meeting as well. And a very great point. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Yes. And that is a very good point. And it's very interesting how I think another element is that the World Health Organization has been working with the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, selling these so-called bonds for emergency pandemics. And they've also at the same time gotten many of the countries around the world in very deep debt to the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank. For example, in South America, they've done that in earnest. Really, by 2012, they had gotten most of these countries so hopelessly in debt that they could never possibly repay them. And the Chinese have been working under that system as well. And what the Chinese have done is, of course, make loans and then demand natural resources as payment. And of course, you know, Venezuela sits on one of the biggest oil reserves in the world. It's sort of tar sand oil, so it's not terribly high quality, but I do believe it's one of the biggest, if not the biggest deposit in the world. And of course, they're evil, you know, very evil country. And, you know, Chile recently had a coup that I believe was backed by the CIA, where the president was overthrown and has had to go to in hiding to Mexico. And of course, you know, Chile sits on the largest lithium deposit in the world. Over $1 trillion worth of lithium is sitting there in Chile. And the big sin that the president did was that he was demanding that in order to mine, for international companies to come in and mine the lithium, that they had to nationalize part of this deposit. And so some of that money would go back to the people of Chile. And of course, he had to be overthrown once he made that clear. And he also wanted to make it clear that he wanted local people to be doing the labor. He didn't want imported labor coming in to do this mining. He wanted his own people to have the jobs. And of course, that is not tolerable as well. So he was removed because the election was a fraud, you know, and now he's in Mexico.
Outrageous. I mean, and look back to what the enforcement arm of the globalist bankers did to Gaddafi. Holy cow. I mean, that guy was really treating his people well, and he was serving a big purpose. He was the gate that was preventing the migrant invasion into Europe, and the world would have been a much better place had they let Gaddafi alone.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, that's why they had to get rid of him. They wanted this infusion and invasion of immigrants from countries that have no cultural ties to the West to help destroy the Western civilization. And, you know, Libya doesn't have the biggest deposit of oil in the world, but it has some of the finest and easiest to refine oil in the world. So that was a big prize for these people. And now he's dead.
Yeah. And the disgusting glee with the demonic Hillary Clinton when she was, you know, tried to be witty, and she's such a dullard, and she goes, "We came, we saw, we conquered," or something, and just cackles like a sadistic lunatic. That's one of the most offensive pieces of video I've ever watched.
Yeah. Yes, play on Julius Caesar's famous quote: "We came, we saw, we conquered." And of course, then she had the witch-like cackle, like something right out of a Wizard of the Oz. Wizard of Oz, yeah.
Hey, sure. Gentlemen, I have a question along the lines of what we were just talking about. I think there is a book that was published probably 2003, 2004 that outlines in great detail the takeover of these countries, as you just spoke of. Are you, gentlemen, familiar with John Perkins' Confessions of an Economic Hitman?
Oh, yeah, I'm looking at it on my shelf, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that was an NSA, no such agency, run operation. And a lot of people aren't aware with that, but that was part of it. And that was the thing that you do is you send in all of this money to it's fake money, but you send in this money to a country that you want to take over their natural resources, and you loan them more money than you know they could ever repay. And so they borrow the money, and then you say, okay, well, one of the contingencies of borrowing this money is you have to use our corporations for your projects. If it's road building, dam building, whatever you're doing, you have to use our wonderful Halliburton and Kellogg Brown and Root and all of these other corporations. You are required to use them, or we won't loan you the money. So then all of the infrastructure is built up to a certain level, and the U.S. government comes in and says, oh, well, it's time to pay off your debt. We're calling it all due. And, of course, the people say, well, you know what, we really can't, we can't afford that right now. Well, that's okay. You have two options. Either turn over your government and your natural resources to the American machine or the international banking machine. Either turn it over to us or the American army will be on your doorstep forthwith. So,
yes, just like Smedley Butler said. Yes. Smedley, like he said so many years ago, in war is a racket. Yeah. Yeah. Smedley Butler. War is a racket. He said that he was nothing more than a strong arm for American corporations and industry.
That's why the Marines don't use him on
Mike, I can confirm what you were. I can confirm what you were saying about Halliburton, because I know for a fact that in Ecuador and in other South American countries, Halliburton pretty much has built all of the oil infrastructure in most South American countries, and they control a great deal of the infrastructure building as well. And you know, it's interesting too, when the Chinese do deals with any of these countries, they insist upon bringing their own labor to run the factories and do the construction.
Exactly.
So, Mike, let me ask you, do you feel that China is truly an independent threat, you know, an independent communist country? Or do you think that that China is really, you know, has deep connections to this so-called intelligence agencies and the deep state, and they've been working together for a long time? What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a mix right now. It's a hybrid mix. I am not seeing – I've got, well, a former Christians in Action is what we refer to the CIA. One of their former agents that I know fairly well had dinner with him a year or so ago. We sat well, actually two retired CIA agents and myself and our families actually sat and had dinner. And one of them has extensive knowledge about China, spent a great part of 30 years in China. And he says it's a mixed bag. And that was a year ago now. So give me that latitude. But he said a year ago that it's a mixed bag, that there's a lot of the Chinese people are rejecting. They like capitalism. They like what they're seeing and being able to be the determiner of your own fate. And he said that most of the lies that he sees about China in the press are, in fact, exactly that, lies. He says China is definitely in the sights, or we wouldn't be threatening China with this, that, or the other, or trying to blame China for this virus. Those things wouldn't be happening if China was totally under control, I don't think. So I hope I've answered your question. I think it's a mixed bag. It's not exactly where they want it to be, but I am sure, just like you know, we thought for years with Mexico with the drug trade, when we found out that most of the Mexican authorities, and they still are, most of the Mexican authorities who are on the drug task force in Mexico are all CIA assets.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I think I agree with that. There is a mixed bag, and you know, it's been said that, you know, America works to build the best enemy that money can buy, and I think that's the strategy here as well. Because you both already know, I'm sure, that, you know, under the Clintons, they were selling and giving away every industrial and military secret they possibly could to the Chinese, and do everything they can to help build up their infrastructure as quickly as possible. The Rockefellers have been involved in China since the 1950s very heavily. So, Giuseppe, what are your thoughts on China?
I think it's convenient that for China and for France and for Hong Kong, that all of a sudden there was a real incipient growing protest movement in all these countries, populism, and all of a sudden, ooh, the nanoterrorist novel coronavirus boogeyman comes, and all of a sudden the hammer drops and there's no protests in China, no protests in Hong Kong, no protests in France. So I think it's very convenient for the oligarchs to have this new tool in their toolkit.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, it's interesting, too, how, you know, Italy wanted to leave the EU. There was a movement growing for Italy to leave the EU because they're tired of it and they're not gaining anything from that association. And of course, Italy was the hardest hit by the virus. Very convenient, like you said. And just yesterday, I was talking to an expat down here who has friends that live in Italy, and they were living in Lombardo, which was the so-called epicenter of this thing. They said nothing was happening and the whole thing was blown out of proportion and a fraud. It was mostly older people that were sick from a variety of diseases that were dying, which is, you know, kind of how life works anyway.
And to confirm what you're saying, the people who did die, if you look at the tracking of the novel coronavirus, it started in China with Wuhan, then mysteriously went to Iran, then it went to Italy, who not only wanted out of the EU, but was really becoming vociferously anti-vaccine. And Dr. Judy Mikovits has observed that they sent a particularly nasty, contaminated version of the flu vaccine to Italy. Ironically, it just happened, right? 60 days before their outbreak. And so the people who died, as you stated, died of a comorbidity. You know, the flu, the tainted flu vaccine killed those people. So it's just insane.
Yeah. And Morpheus in the chat room is talking about Perkins' book. And he said that the former president of Panama and the former president of Ecuador were taken out because they didn't want to cooperate. I can confirm that. The president of Ecuador that was taken out, it was in the 1980s sometime, and he died in a mysterious plane accident, a plane crash. And, of course, him and his whole family died. That was, again, very convenient. I wondered if you or Mike are familiar with Joel Skousen.
Oh, very familiar, right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, we were talking about Russia and China, and one of Skousen's theory, and of course, Skousen's uncle wrote the book The Naked Communist a long time ago, but one of Skousen's pet theories is that the ultimate plan is to have a World War III against Russia and China, in which America intentionally loses this war that goes nuclear. And America goes ahead and takes a nuclear hit and allows for essentially an invasion from the other side. Mike, have you heard this theory? And what do you think about the possibility of that being true?
I've heard the theory. I think I would have to look very deeply into a lot of that. I am not a fan of Skousen on any level. When it comes to Russia, I think Russia right now is that elephant in the room that no one wants to talk about. And the one thing that I know from my sources is that during our wonderful war on terror, as George W. called it, that we are now have watched Russia do advancements in their military arsenal specialized weapons that has just left us in the dust. So that may very well be something that is on the horizon. I certainly wouldn't rule it out. But right now, I think when it comes right down to military technology, we are probably in the third grade in Russia's college. The other thing I think that is critical is when you look at the amount of gold that both Russia and China have bought, by the metric ton over the past decade. I think that is significant as well.
That is significant. So you don't think gold is just a barbarous relic, as they've called it?
Well, anybody who doesn't want you to value it would call it that, right?
Right, exactly, yeah. I just want to let everyone know listening that we will be taking calls the next hour, and the call-in number is 703-879-8880. That's 703-879-8880. Giuseppe, any thoughts on this dystopic view of a possible World War III that Joel Skousen thinks is a possibility?
I think that there is definitely going to be some type of global conflict, because it's apparent that the plutocrats and the globalist parasites want a one world or a two world digital currency, and they want authoritarian control via contact tracing and social credit system, and that I think that they'll be very happy to at least have a bipolar a new world order event occurring in the very near future. So I think it absolutely, we're all well on our way to that. And sadly, and unless the American people and other nationalists around the world wake up and realize who their real enemy is, it's not the Democrat versus Republican. It's all of us populists against the globalist parasites.
Yes, and maybe on the next hour we can sort of go into what you guys think of the future of government, because I think the whole future of government is in question, and what will it be, and what are people willing to accept? So that would be an interesting topic to touch upon. I'm just amazed at how quickly everything is moving ahead right now. It seems like they've hit the fast forward mark, and they're under some kind of a timetable. And, you know, I thought they were going to give us a break in the summertime from this pandemic. But, of course, I think that would have been bad strategy looking back on it. They have a lot of momentum built up, and they don't want to lose that momentum. So they're going to keep going forward, and I think until next year sometime. Okay, the music's coming on, and everyone, hang on, and we'll be right back. Okay, we're back here on the second hour of the Scorpio Conspiracy Show. I'm here with Giuseppe and Mr. Mike Gatti, two of the newest hosts to come here on Revolution Radio. And again, Giuseppe's show comes on Friday nights, 6 p.m., Studio A, and Mike comes on 6 p.m. Sunday nights, Studio A as well. And when we left the last hour, I was mentioning about how they're, you know, they didn't want to lose their momentum on this COVID plandemic, let's say. And unfortunately, I'm not seeing any signs that they plan on letting this up for at least another year. And I'll give you a little evidence of where I'm coming from, and then I want to see what you guys think. Number one, Joe Biden is talking about if he becomes president, he's going to press for a national mask-wearing mandate. So, of course, that wouldn't even take place sometime until 2021, even if that's like the first thing he does. So that's, again, already into next year. And, you know, my family has been associated with academia for many years. They're all retired now, but they get newsletters from several different universities. And two major universities on this mailing list are already offering contact tracing courses for next fall. So again, you'd have to take the course, and then it wouldn't be until 2021 sometime where you'd be certified to be a contact tracer. So again, another indication that this is going on well into 2021. And then, of course, we're seeing all kinds of, you know, new kinds of masks made, you know, not just the plain old surgical masks. They have the embroidered ones and ones with fancy colors for the women so women can look pretty in their mask. And again, these are all indications this is not coming to an end anytime soon. And then I guess the last piece of evidence I'd bring forward is these COVID stores that are popping up all over the world. I've seen stories on them in the United States, and in the town I'm in, two different COVID stores have opened up, and even by the admission of the government, there are no sick people where I am, not a single person in this town, but we now have two COVID stores because a lot of the old stores have closed, and miraculously, there's now COVID stores in their place. Mike, why don't you take this first? What do you think the timeline is for this? Because I don't see that they're going to let this go in the near future.
Well, we're so far into the game now. The only way that this is going to end is when they have achieved their desired goals. When we have mass vaccinations of everyone, and that's the reason they're setting up these tracer schools in various places. And, a few months ago, they hit us with this number of, I think it was the governor of New York talked about having 35,000 tracers for the city of New York. And so then suddenly it dies. So they must have felt like there was some kind of feedback from that, because that's usually the standard operating procedure. If you get too much pushback, you drop back and then come at it from another angle. But they are continuing with these COVID tracers. They're going to, and see, this thing is insidious in its very nature, is that the authorities, whoever they may be, but as Jack McLam says, when tyranny comes to your door, it'll be wearing a uniform and a badge. So when they send someone to your door and they say, okay, well, we heard last week that you were at Lowe's and there was a person there who had COVID, and you came within close, according to our cameras, you came within a close proximity of this person. So we will now have to take you and put you into quarantine, and we can't even tell your family where you will. Well, when they come after the people who are onto their game, or the people who like to refer to themselves as patriots now, when they start coming to the doors and start taking these people, they will either take the people who they consider to be dangerous, or take a member of that person's family to use as leverage. And there, you know, I could write you a schematic of how this whole thing will eventually play out, but I'm afraid we don't have enough time to talk about it, Dave.
Yes. Mona's making a good point in the chat room. I do not consent to their reality. Thank you. I totally agree. Giuseppe, what are your thoughts on this timeline? And, they're kind of, teasing people. Well, pretty soon it's going to let up once we have the vaccine and blah, blah, blah. So what do you think about that?
Well, that's exactly it. It will let up and you'll get to participate in the new normal when A, you've gotten the vaccine, B, you're agree to constant surveillance via contact tracing, and see you get rid of all your cash and comply with the new digital currency, and D, when you have a social credit score above 700. So it's insidious. And one other point is that there is no test for the novel coronavirus. There is absolutely no test for that bug.
Yeah, because Dashi was asking that in the chat room. So, yeah, okay. Thank you for covering that. This is quite incredible. And, maybe we should all buy hand sanitizer stock as an investment, so we can make some money off all this.
Oh, yeah.
Because that seems to be a growth industry somehow.
Right. Shall I add a caller?
The thing to do, gentlemen, would be to check in and see, prior to the outbreak of coronavirus, who invested heavily in the hand sanitizer companies.
Yes, just like in 9/11 with the shorting of the airline stocks. Yes. Giuseppe, you said there's a caller.
Yes. Paul from California would like to join the conversation. So let me try and see. Sometimes it takes two times, but let me try this first time anyway.
Okay, and in the meantime, I'll give out the number one more time in case anybody else wants to call in. The number is 703.
Give me name and number, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Thanks.
All right.
Okay. The number is 703-879. Uh-oh. Paul is unavailable.
No, he's
Hello, Paul.
Available.
This is the Scorpio Show calling. No. Okay, so let me just give out the call-in number one more time, 703-879-8880. That's 703-879-8880.
Scorpio.
So, yeah, continue with your thoughts, Giuseppe.
You made an excellent point about selling short, and that who sold short on the entire economy back when the whole pandemic hit in February. I mean, there's some people who made a ton of money and knew what was coming. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's always about the money on some level, but of course, on levels above that, it's not about the money. It's simply about the consolidation of power and the consolidation of assets.
Good point.
Yeah. So, Mike, do you have any other thoughts on your mind for today?
Well, that I wrote, believe it or not, in 2002, I think it was, I wrote an from that that particular event of research to really get into that, and I found out that it government involved because they were claiming were the people who bought all of the put options on American and United Airlines when none of the other airlines saw that kind of investment. So and the government says, well, there were lots of people who bought that, lots of people made lots of money, but we have no idea who they were. Well, that was complete, and FBI tracks every stock trade that is made, and they have a program that does that. So for them to then allege, people made millions of dollars on 9/11, but we have no clue who they were.
Gentlemen, I believe we have a caller, Paul from California. Welcome to the Scorpio Conspiracy Show.
Good day, gentlemen. Stand by. Paul from California has a theme song for today. Could be for several shows. Ready? Here we go.
Yeah, there you go.
You know, instead of gunning us down, I was watching video during the break of in Seattle, horrifically, some of these idiotic Antifas were trying to block a highway, and they got run over, probably dead. I mean, that was a high-speed vehicle, and how can you be that stupid? I don't know.
Anyway, I hope that was somewhat effective. My favorite lines from that song, which is a great song, calls to mind a much different time in this country when the music was actually good and you could listen to it. But the best line, of course, in that song is, "Time to get down to it. Should have been done long time ago." And I remember there was a website I used to go to, and I don't know what it is. I'd have to do lots of searching, but the tagline of the website is, "Our forefathers would already be shooting." And to this discussion,
that's a good point.
That's good.
Where Mike gave the best answer when Scorpio raised the point about they're not going to let go of this anytime soon. And, you know, whatever Joe Biden says, basically, if there was ever a cardboard movie cutout, it would be Joe Biden, who will more than likely have an aneurysm shortly in his administration, so we can have like a black woman president. That's the Jewish wet dream. But anyway, what Mike said is so crucial. What he said was it'll be over when they have achieved all their goals. And it reminds me of a point that I've made emphatically on many shows, including Jim Fetzer's show, where I said that it has to be clear. The very first thing we have to get through our heads, and we have to drill into anybody else who's open to it, is we have an implacable enemy, a multi-generational implacable enemy that is determined and organized like no other. And the only time it's going to end is when they're dead, or we are mostly totally defeated, and many of us, the ones that count, are dead. So that's when it's going to end. Go whoever wants now.
Yeah, that was actually a very chillingly concise statement by Mike. I think he's absolutely right. That is when it's going to end, and it's going to be one way or the other, like you said, Paul. There isn't going to be much room for any in-between, I don't believe.
No, there's not, unfortunately. But that's the thing. And Giuseppe and I have had conversations, you know, off the air, and we don't really have similar backgrounds, but we went through similar things as kids. He went through more of it, but we both learned some lessons. And one of the lessons that we learned, and I'm sure Giuseppe will agree, is that oftentimes violence works. Okay. And if it didn't work, that it wouldn't be used so much throughout history, and it wouldn't be forced upon us. And that if one side is willing to use violence of all sorts, and it constantly preaches to you that you must remain nonviolent, then, you know, we've already lost.
Well, gentlemen, I've got
some conditioning, absolutely. Go ahead. Go ahead, Mike.
I probably stepped on you, Dave. But here is my firm belief. I tell people every day, enjoy today, folks, because that's the best you're going to see for the rest of your life, because this thing is going to get drastically worse. And there is no freedom worth having that you're not willing to die for.
Yeah, there's going to be some hard choices we all have to make. You know, I'm not taking the shot, and I'm not going to submit to any kind of invasive contact tracing or mandatory testing of any kind. Giuseppe, I think you wanted to jump in. Go ahead.
Oh, I think that agreed with everything everybody's saying. And I think one of the things that is going to help us win this battle is the fact that they're rushing these untested, unproven vaccines that are based on statistical modeling, as Scorpio so brilliantly observed. They're going to injure permanently a lot of people. They're going to kill a lot of people. And the whole idea, the fear operant conditioning, is going to turn on the evil, and most sane people are going to realize I want nothing to do with that vaccine. And I pray and hope that this whole plan, this whole attack falls apart at that point.
Well, I want to get your guys' take on sort of what's happening on the ground, because we're all in different parts of the world. Giuseppe, you're in Virginia. Mike is in Georgia, and Paul's in California. And I'm just sort of curious about what you think the state is of people's understanding of the deception that we're being fed right now. You know, for example, down here, I was speaking to a woman who runs a little fruit stand in the town here. She probably has a sixth grade education, a very nice woman, but not someone that's, highly educated. We were talking about this pandemic, and at first she was saying, oh yeah, the pandemic's causing all these troubles. And as soon as I opened the door to a conversation about it being fraudulent and greatly exaggerated, she got right on board. Because I told her flat out, I believe this is a scam. And in Spanish, that's una estafa. This is a estafa. And she she thought for a minute, and I could see the gears turning in her head. And she said to me, you know, other people have said that to me, and I've been wondering, how come not a single world leader has gotten this disease and died? So again, guys, Paul, you could go first. What do you see from people on the ground when you just talk to people? What's your sense of understanding of the people around you?
Well, it's a dual edged or triple edged sword. On the one hand, I see a sickening level of compliance and mask wearing, the likes of which is just, I find staggering. I mean, I'm talking about 95%, you know, literally. And especially now with this renewed BS about, oh, there's a spike. Oh, there's a second wave. Oh, you know, there's an upsurge in all these cases, right? And all these major news sites are just joining in. Meanwhile, they provide no evidence, okay? They don't, I mean, we all know this is the most amazing thing these people have ever done, and you got to hand it to them for having the stones to do it. But in particular answer to your question, I agree with the fact that I find more acceptance to these ideas of the fraud and the hoax by Hispanics and Blacks. I find a lot of white people a tougher go, which pisses me off to no end, I got to tell you. I just had an incident today, just cruising up to the shopping center to get a sandwich and a coffee, and ran into two people I know pretty well. One of them is an older white woman who works as a clerk at Rite Aid, and we've talked before, and she likes my dog, right? And another is a guy and his dog that I haven't seen for a while. He normally came to the coffee shop. And the conversation began, you know, pleasantly enough until, you know, one thing or another was said, and that's Paul's my cue to go. And, you know, the minute I tell them, oh, what pandemic? What are you talking about? There is no pandemic. And you should have seen the eye rolls. I mean, the eye rolls from them. And then, you know, oh, I know somebody who got it and died. Oh, really? Did you see the autopsy? Did you see cell cultures? What evidence do you have that they died of this? And then the other guy chimes in. He says, oh, so you don't believe in science. Scorpio, Giuseppe, Mike, if I had a dollar for every time some idiot uses the word science, I just want to substitute TV or YouTube, because that's all science is to these people, is television. Literally, they have not a brain cell or two to rub together. When I asked this guy, could he tell me what a virus was? Because he was so convinced that a virus is what caused him to lose part of his liver. I said, well, what did you have, hepatitis? He goes, yeah. I said, well, do you know what hepatitis is? Have you looked up the definition? You know, no words came out of his mouth, as usual. And I said, I had to do it for him. I said, hepatitis is just inflammation of the liver. So why was your liver inflamed? I didn't probe into its history, but every single idiot who's walking around thinking that they got a virus or some other sort of illness has more than likely had a terrible diet, been a drinker, been a drug user, like another guy I know who died of liver failure, and have basically not taken care of themselves. And so therefore now they are all on board with this boogeyman because that relieves them of any responsibility for their own health. We got to agree with the medical establishment. This one woman said to me, isn't it a good time we should all be cooperating with the government? I shook my head. I go, no, exactly the opposite. Anyway, it's frustrating. In a word, Scorpio, it's frustrating as hell.
Yeah, and Paul, I think you're hitting on a very interesting point about science, because we're seeing the introduction of this technocratic system where we have scientists and experts that are making policy and telling us how to behave, what to do, and what to believe. It's sort of the introduction of this technocracy that Patrick Wood has talked about. Mike, you're in Georgia. Could you give us a report of just what you see on the ground when you talk to people?
Well, Dave, I will be happy to. Let me jump back a page or two and throw a scenario at you. It's heavy on my mind, and then I will jump to answer your question. And one is, if I was running this PSYOP, and I have seen one or two in my lifetime, if I were running this PSYOP, I would say, like the government is saying, we're going to take this vaccine, and we're going to give it to our military first. Well, they have made that statement. So if I were running this PSYOP, every vaccine that was given military would be inert. There would actually be basically nothing there whatsoever. The actual members of the military wouldn't know there was nothing there whatsoever. But they would get basically an inert vaccine so that the government can, a few months later, say, look, there has been absolutely no side effects from this whatsoever, and that will make more of Bubus Americanus jump in line to get their vaccination. That's what I would do. The other thing that
that's a great point, Mike. Very interesting.
How it's going to come going down the road. What I see in my ball is that they continue to promote a racial war inside the United States, and they're promoting as they can, and they are pushing it. The government is obviously behind both Antifa and BLM. Giving these people money in huge, huge amounts. And I'm not just going to blame it on George Soros. I'm going to put it because the police protect Antifa. I've got many examples of surreal. When they were actually tearing up things, they were protected from people who tried to stop them and protected by the local authorities. So a race war breaking out in America, being the justifiable reason for another country to come in to put down this rebellion, put down this war, And that's how you see a one world government takeover. Now, that's just a scenario that I would propose from policy. The other thing that I am seeing, to answer your question, and pardon me for running around the barn to answer, but I'm seeing that troubles me so much is an increase in the number of compliant people. From 2 or 3 months back, I'm seeing more and more who are on the mask, who, oh, yes, you know, well, have you read the label that says, you know, your price?
Is Mike cutting out? Mike, let me just hold on there with you for a minute. We'll come back to you in just a minute. You're having a lot of cutouts. Giuseppe, you're in Virginia. Could you share what you see on the ground just when talking with people?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'd also like to comment on Mike's insightful observation of if there were actual intelligent people running these ops. In reality, the military are like cattle, and they've gotten all real vaccines and have gotten sick and had horrific health. And some of these vaccines, the last decade or so, have infiltrated their wives and their unborn children. So Mike, he's right. That's the smart play, to put a placebo in all of it and just put distilled water. But they're not even doing that. They believe their own lies so much. Psychopaths, after a while, no longer have the ability to discern the lies, the sophistry, the corporate marketing of these vaccines from reality. And so thank God they're not smart enough to do that. And that point being made. Secondly, what's going on here, 11 miles west of the District of Criminals, is way, way too much compliance. There's an organic ice cream store. For the 4th of July, a couple days ago, went to buy some to have as a treat this weekend. And a couple months earlier, I had gone there, and it's owned by some woke people, and I walked in without a mask, and I was like, wow, you're not wearing masks, really. Oh, no, my mother's a nurse practitioner, and she knows this is all BS and blah, blah, blah. And so then, I went the other day, like July 1st, about, or 2nd, and I walked in there not wearing a mask, and everybody had a mask on, even the people who were against it. And they were all looking at me, why are you not wearing a mask?
Oh my God.
Okay, we'll pick it back up after the break here, and we'll take the final order of the show. Okay, we'll be right back. Okay, we're back here on the Scorpio Conspiracy Show. I am talking with Giuseppe and Mr. Mike Gatti and Paul in California. Mike, let's go back to you, because you got cut off short there. I thought your hypothesis of a test run using an inert vaccine, I never thought of that, and that would be a very good strategy on their part. And I've noticed that you've been cutting out at very strategic times. I'm sure it's just a coincidence, but maybe you could finish up your thought on what you were saying before you started cutting out.
Well, let me give it a try. Am I doing okay now?
Yeah, you sound good.
My prognostication would be, if I were running, as I would push very hard for a race war in America. Because
it's already a done deal.
The support for Antifa on a corporate level is absolutely fine, I'm sure. And speaking with several people in the law enforcement community, there is no doubt whatsoever that I am an Antifa, have government protection, which takes me back to the Cuban insurgents in Miami who were given back in the 60s and 70s. So it is coming down from on top. And I do encountering these people. These
same
people
thing.
Are coming up with massive amounts of cash.
Yes, yes. Well, I know the theory, this theory is up Paul's alley here to some degree. So Paul, what do you think about this intentional stirring up of racial hatred right now across the country?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's real, and it's going to happen sooner or later. They know it. And any white person who sees, I don't care how many good friends you have. I mean, obviously I have friends who are black, and I've had plenty of pleasant interaction with blacks, but lots of unpleasant interaction, I think, is the norm, and Giuseppe can testify to that, I'm sure. And if you listen to and you hear the amount of hate that these people have for us, I mean, they're not shy about it. You can see it on Twitter and Instagram, and you can hear it on YouTube videos. I mean, it's real. It reminds me of that old, song back in the 70s. They all hate us anyhow. Let's drop the big one now. I mean, the bottom line is you might as well be prejudiced. You might as well be a racist. You might as well be a white supremacist and a Nazi, because it doesn't matter. There is no appeasing these people. And what it makes me think of, and it's made me think of this for a long time, is the sort of angry, hurt, disgruntled people that were on the outside of the social circles and whatever stage of life you want to go, junior high, high school, I mean, after, the kind of people that generally, they're not maybe that attractive, and they don't have that interesting of a personality, or they're not go-getters, they're not achievers, and they're generally just, what we call, winners. And these are the people that are, have it in for us. And you can kind of understand in some way, if you remember when you were young and immature and you maybe didn't get your way, or, you couldn't go out with that girl or that woman that you really wanted to go out with because, she just, may be out of your league a little bit. And there's that little bit of resentment that comes in. I mean, these people, when you look at them, when you see them, and when you listen to them, you realize they're very, very hurt and ugly, and in many cases they're substandard human beings, and physically and mentally they weren't the straight A students, they weren't captain of any athletic team in school, and there's no talking to them. I mean, if you've ever had to try to have a conversation with some of these, as the media likes to call deranged leftist democratic liberal lunatics, there's no convincing them, there's no selling them. We have to dominate, we have to rule. I mean, there's no other choice. Like I said in many calls, and Giuseppe knows this well, you either rule or you get ruled. And what these people, the South Koreans, the Ethiopians, all our known enemies, right, that we can have fun with and use all kinds of, different ways to categorize them, they have in mind that we're going to get ruled by blacks and women. I mean, it's obvious. Look at how many black police chiefs, black mayors, lesbian mayors and governors, over and over and over again, Washington and Oregon and California. I mean, my God.
Oh, yes, Paul. I totally noticed the same thing. And I'm surprised at how many police chiefs are lesbian women and black women and all kinds of people that really they couldn't possibly be the best person for the job. They're put there as part of the social engineering program.
Right. It's the inversion, as simple as that. Everybody knows, okay, that really knows, that will let their mind and their heart see it and believe it, that white men are the foundation of Western civilization, okay? It's not white women. It's not black men or black women. It's not anybody else. It's white men. It always has been that way, and there's nothing wrong with it. It's just the beautiful law of nature, okay? That's all it is. And if you really think about it, okay, all these people do is promote ugliness and dysfunction. That's what they do. I remember a radio show back in the 80s when, before the internet, before the alt-right, there was the so-called conservative people who in many cases got it right. And I remember this one guy talking about the fact that the best and the brightest should get the majority of the resources. That's the only thing that makes sense in an advanced society. And it might not be what you want to hear, but the bottom line is, if you're forming a business or you're forming an athletic team or you're forming an elite military unit, who are you going to take? The slowest and the ugliest and the disgruntled? No. So these people got to get used to the fact that, A, you're not in charge and you're not going to be in charge. But I think white men in many cases have been beaten down and have lost their will to dominate. And we can't be shy about it. And I know at least one person on this call agrees with me. Thank you.
Well, yes. And, you know, one thing I've learned from, you know, traveling to various third world countries is that if you are too nice and giving to people, they see it in many third world countries as a sign of weakness, not as a sign of virtue. So you get these people from Somalia and other countries, they're not going to see social norms and mores on the same level that Americans do. Giuseppe, what are your thoughts on this issue?
I think that everything Paul is saying is clearly proving out by the antics of Antifa and Black Lives Matter. And I'm a big fan of an onion spoof site on the internet these days called the Babylon Bee. And the Babylon Bee on July 1st put up a picture of LeBron James sitting in a Lamborghini, and they superimposed a white homeless dude in the lower right part of it. And it appears as though LeBron James has rolled his window down, and the headline for the picture goes, "Powerful colon, LeBron James pulls over to lecture a homeless man on his white privilege." And I mean, to me, that's humor, but it's actually absolutely true. And what Paul is so eloquently describing is the fact that we're in an insane asylum where the weaponized minorities rule the country. And the picture of that Seattle chief of police, the black woman with the headlines, the lights are on, but no one's home. Look, when she's talking to the media. And I mean, to me, it looked like she was an extra in the comedy with Leslie Nielsen, Police Squad, right? Or the Naked Gun. And it's just so
yeah,
that you can't have those type of people. Now I would, to this day, I would say, if we really had leadership, there would be living wage jobs for everyone in this country, and you would have the opportunity to work. And not everybody is a rock star, not everybody's a rap star, not everybody is a model. But if society was truly run by rational people, we would have everybody have a living wage, because Henry Ford so brilliantly, and he was certainly aware of the real enemies of this country, employed, his quote was essentially, "I'm going to pay my workers an excellent wage because they're going to turn around and buy my cars." And that's exactly right. You pay people now and give them a job, they're going to spend all their money. And why aren't we doing that?
But wait a minute.
Well, that's a very good point, Giuseppe. And you know, what's interesting in this so-called revolution that's happening now is that the big corporations are saying, "Hey, we're aboard with you guys. We're going to give you $100 million to help." And it's kind of like these corporations are hiding behind this movement. So they say, "Wait, we're progressive. We're hip. We're cool." But in reality, it's these corporations that are responsible for offshoring the jobs, getting rid of American labor, importing millions of workers that really shouldn't be in the country, and they're doing it for money and for social engineering purposes. And like Giuseppe said, at one time in the past, there was actually some kind of national pride involved in some of the corporations, and that's completely gone thanks to internationalism.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I'd like to add to that, too. I want to take a little bit of issue with what Giuseppe said, because obviously Henry Ford was a cisgendered white male, privileged upbringing, and all he did was build things and provide employment for people. So what on earth would his opinion matter in this world? Why do we care?
Yeah, let's tear a statue down.
Right. I mean, what we need to hear from the victim of institutionalized discrimination. We need to hear from the 85 IQ brown mixed race person who came across this border illegally because their own country was more or less a shithole that lacked opportunity because they lived around so many other mixed race brown people. No, we need to hear from a black person from Africa. In many cases, the sub-Saharan IQ average is 70. By the way, interesting of note is I recently was watching some stuff on Muhammad Ali, and I checked him out, and he reportedly had an IQ of 79, as verbal as he was. And that came from the Army intelligence test that he took. So the bottom line is...
Well,
I'll bet
you Henry Ford was a homophobe as well as a racist.
Right. But it brings home the point of what they're trying to do, which is, you know, and it reminds me of what the Germans, and particularly Hitler and the other National Socialists, what they pitched to their people, more or less, and this comes from an article I read recently, where they said, okay, socialism is a good idea, but we have the choice. Do you want to have international Jewish communist Bolshevik socialism, or would you want to have national socialism based upon our own nation, our own people? And obviously the German people spoke quite loudly with what they wanted, and they were happy and prosperous until the Jew world order destroyed them. And that's a lesson that we can never forget.
Well, yes, and we've come a long way from any kind of a government caring about the population. In fact, we've reached the polar opposite, right, where they're intending on genociding as many people as they can in order to hold on to power and keep things the way they want, and to bring in this new system that's already been planned for a long time. Mike, what are your thoughts on the role of government? And I know you have some different ideas about government and what its possible future is. Oh, it looks like we maybe lost Mike. Giuseppe, why don't you jump in?
I think that – oh, Mike might be there now. Go ahead, Mike.
Oh, go ahead, Mike. Yeah.
As I
– no, he's not coming in. Go ahead, Giuseppe.
I did hear him, but it seems like his internet connection is coming in and out. The crazy thing about everything we're discussing is that if you talk to the average person, and, you know, I've been have friends all over the country from my job in the 90s when I had to travel all the time, and family back in the Midwest, and we know I'm a personal guy. Mm-hmm. I make friends. Oh, there he is. Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, Mike, go ahead and jump in.
So let Giuseppe finish his story.
Yeah, well, Mike seems to be getting cut off at various strategic times. Giuseppe, yeah, go ahead and continue, please.
Okay, so where I was going with this is everywhere you go, and I'm always curious to subtly gauge where people stand as far as understanding who our real enemy is. And 8 times out of 10, a few questions talking about the past, and people get it. The great majority of people understand that we are oppressed by some globalist parasites, and that our decent way of life is under attack. And it's amazing to me why this cognitive dissonance develops, where people quickly agree with you, but then they don't do anything to right the ship or join together. Because the greatest weapon we have in this country is numbers, and we're never pulling together in any meaningful way.
Yeah, and that's a whole separate issue. But yeah, it's because the organizing, shall we say, fabric of society, let's face it, right now is television.
Yeah,
we don't have that much interaction with government. Think about the most interaction most people have with government is when they get a ticket from a cop. That's pretty much it. I mean,
that's a good point. And, you know, if you look at the history of what this government's done, I don't see how people can be looking to the government to solve any problems now, because it's undeniable that government has caused far more problems than it's ever solved.
Right. And a guy made a very, what I call pithy, I like that word, a very pithy point the other day on a blog, where he basically said that not only is it not the government's job, okay, to do many of the things that they're claiming they can do and want to do, but they're not equipped to do it, and they don't really have any interest in helping you do anything or making your life better. That's got to be clear to most people. They don't have an interest in making you more prosperous. They don't have an interest in making you healthier. They don't have an interest in protecting you. If you can't get that through your head, then, you know, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, the bottom line is we are on our own, and the government will quickly fade away, in my opinion, because a lot of these people that they're throwing to the side now, such as like good white cops, are going to come to our side. They're not going to go to any other side. So I think that's a pretty big miscalculation on their part. I don't think that they can pull off this dystopic October revolution like they did in Russia. I really don't. I hope, I cross my fingers and hope that I'm correct.
Well, I think you're right to some degree, Paul. I think it is a paper tiger to some degree. They've really trying to puff things up like a blowfish and make them seem like they're more powerful than they are. And I think the big divide in America is going to be particularly between the rural areas and the big cities. That's where you're going to see the big dividing line.
Well, I don't know, boys. Right. I got to wait and see what George Clooney tells me to think.
Okay, well, yeah. Let's get him on the call.
And just for the fun of it, if I take a couple of minutes here, I would love to do another show and take a little longer to do it. I do a little housekeeping here with the comment section, because I do read the comment section on a regular basis. And I got to tell you, Scorpio, your show, you get a lot of comments and you get a very robust back and forth in the comment section. But this is for Panzerfaust and any others who, you know, have contended that I'm a plant somehow. Okay.
Yes, you're a plant.
I'm not the kind of guy that most people would want to plant, because I'm probably not going to grow the way you want me to grow, you know. And so I don't know who would plant me, what their purpose would be. But thanks for sticking up for me there, Scorpio. You've done that on a couple of occasions. And here's another something that was said. I think it might have been by known, unknown, or whatever. But essentially, my general response to anybody that wants to take a run at me in the comment section is call some of these shows. Call this show. Put some content on the air, okay? Step your game up, all right? I want to hear from you, okay? I promise I won't critique you too hard in the comment section.
But, yeah, yeah, and that's a good point. And, you know, we don't all have to agree on every point. As long as we're telling, things honestly about what we think and what we perceive, because none of us have all the pieces to the puzzle.
Right. And just real quick, and I'm almost done for now, somebody made some comment about it. I seem to, tout my conclusions as if they're just, hard – just done deal truth without, quote, fact-checking anything. Now, I don't know where I would go and what I need to do to so-called fact-check. But since consciousness is non-local, and I firmly believe that since I first heard it, I thought it was an amazing idea. And somebody once asked me, well, what do you mean consciousness non-local? I said, well, it's not contained within the confines of your skull. So I think that anybody who's gone on a knowledge journey and has pushed themselves, has read, has thought, has spent enough time, realizes that you can go places with your mind, and sometimes things come to you. You know, we've all woken up with realizations and ideas. And where does that come from? And I think it comes from the universe. And so this isn't some wacky theory, you know, Paul's not smoking too much, hopium. Just the idea that we could make our own conclusions based upon what our own mind tells us. And so I'm not arguing anything that a lot of you people probably haven't already thought. And as far as those people that were talking about, oh, what am I saying, that viruses don't exist? No, that's a simplistic idea. That was not the nature of the discussion. What I have said and what many other people have said is what they tell us might not be the whole truth and might not be the proper understanding and perspective. But what I do firmly believe is there isn't anything different in the natural world than there ever was. That's what I believe. And I believe that we've been lied to on so many topics for so long that a righteous first conclusion is we're being lied to again until further notice. Thanks.
I'd like to interject, and I meant to go into those comments and clarify. I know the Mikeovitz family personally, and they are and have always been devout Catholics. Somebody accused her of being a Jewess, and that last name is Hungarian. That's why it's like that. So,
yeah, and okay. Both Paul and Giuseppe are referring to the comment section over at grism.blogspot.com.
Which, by the way, isn't enjoyable. It's an enjoyable and robust comment section, and keep it coming.
Oh, yeah. It's like the Wild West in there sometimes, but it's interesting for sure. Mike, let's see if we can get you back on board. Do you have any closing thoughts about what we've been talking about?
That's too bad.
Okay. It looks like we got technical problems on Mike's end. Giuseppe, what would be your final thoughts?
My final thoughts are that Revolution Radio is totally independent and user-supported, no advertisements. No corporate sponsorship or control of the content. This is awesome, one of the top 10 largest internet radio networks in the world. And please consider donating. And the best way would be to go on to Patreon, and for $5 or $10 a month, which is not that much money for working people especially, then you get access to all the archives, tens of thousands of hours of brilliant free speech and interaction. So please donate. And also next Friday, July 10th at 6 p.m. Eastern, I replaced the great Jim Fetzer with my new show. And, you know, how do you replace a legend? Well, you interview a legend. Two legends, Dr. Judy Mikovits and Scorpio, will be joining me on my initial show called The Perfect Triangle. And tune in, and hope you not only tune in, but call in as well.
Yeah, great. Very good thoughts. And the only thing I would add to your thing about Revolution Radio is, yes, donate. And also, please tell friends of yours about Revolution Radio, because word of mouth really is the best advertising. And the freedom of speech is more important than ever, and this platform is more important than ever. Paul, what are your final thoughts?
Well, I'd like to take this opportunity to announce that I will be a write-in candidate for the presidency this November. Just write in Paul from California on your ballot. Just a little preview of what my platform will be. In my administration, there will be plenty of white privilege, probably a little racism, certainly lots of deportation, a big healthy dose of national socialism, together with just a touch, just enough to flavor the cake, of anti-Semitism. So again, write my name in, Paul from California for president. You won't regret it.
Oh, great. We'll make sure to get you a limousine and a private jet so you can fly around and campaign.
And by the way, there will be rent control to all you super wealthy landlords, both commercial and residential, that continue to gouge the average working person. Rent will probably be capped, just as the Germans did, at about 1/8 or so of what a working man makes. Imagine the blessing for this country if you only had to pay about 12% or so of your salary towards rent.
Yeah, and I believe that the Germans had a wealth cap, too. There was only a certain amount of millions that one person was allowed to own. And I just don't think the world actually needs billionaires, because they seem to just do nothing than cause problems and start to think that they're somehow gods instead of human beings.
Oh, well boy, said. Bill well Gates said. And Zuckerberg and Bezos and all kinds of other tribe members would beg to differ with you on that, Scorpio.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, I was just hearing a story on this PBS NewsHour about all the hate speech that's going on Facebook. It's really quite a problem, apparently. They brought up Candace Owens as part of the problem, and then mentioned some white guys that met each other on Facebook before they killed some people. And that was interesting. But don't worry, the ADL already has a solution in mind, and they had a representative from the ADL, you know, telling what we should do, what we should think, and so there's no cause for alarm there. It's already under control, and we'll stop all the hate speech on Facebook. It's so dangerous. It's just, you know, people dying in the streets from it.
Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain as the dog pulls back the curtain.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah, I mean, and I can't help but think that Zuckerberg looks like an android sometimes. I'm not saying I believe that, but he does seem robotic sometimes.
He does. And by the way, too, just on that other rant I was just going on, I think I sent Giuseppe an email about it. I may have included you, Scorpio, that now San Francisco has decided to no longer publish the mugshots because they don't want to perpetuate stereotypes of blacks and browns committing crimes.
Oh, my God.
Well, it was before that they would actually turn up the contrast so that they appeared lighter in color on many of the photographs. Yeah. Isn't that wonderful? Okay, that's about it for the show. I want to thank everyone that listened, and Mike, Paul, and Giuseppe for coming on. Thanks very much. And we'll catch everyone next week. Take care and have a good 4th of July. Bye-bye.